Hi, everybody. This is Bob Ryan of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We're going to be discussing the gruesome injury to Gordon Hayward, its ramifications for him, the team, the league, and the balance of power in the NBA on the Sports Reporters Podcast Friday. Now, to subscribe to this podcast, go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows and hit subscribe. New episodes are published every Monday and Friday.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I'm happy because I knew we had to record today, and I also knew it's Thursday. I also knew Philadelphia versus Washington was going to happen on Wednesday night, and I was really nervous that if the Sixers somehow pulled an upset, if Embiid had a triple-double, if TJ McConnell won his individual matchup with John Wall, that it would be the bleakest podcast. I mean, coming on the heels, obviously, of the Nationals' depressing loss in the playoffs, I was really worried where we were going to go. But instead, you're chipper. You know, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. You're texting me, hey, let's get this podcast started. I'm ready to go. It's sort of like a national holiday for you. So let's do it.
I was running through the streets of D.C. celebrating our big win over the Sixers. Absolutely. And you're right. I would have been borderline inconsolable today if they had blown that game last night, in part because of my weird relationship with Sixers internet. So I would have been hearing about it for like the following month, and watching it, I was pretty stressed out halfway through that game. But we'll get to the Sixers and the Wizards at the end. More than anything else, I mean, we just had to celebrate the entire league, because I feel like we had Tuesday night was opening night. It was great. Well, it was kind of mixed emotions on that one with Hayward. But then last night we had the full spectrum, and we have a lot to get through. And you and I have just been texting back and forth for the last like 72 hours with a lot of different early hot takes coming from, especially coming from you. And so I thought that today, instead of mail, we're just going to go through some of the early overreactions that we've had around the league. How about that?
That sounds great. Yeah, you mentioned opening night. I mean, what more can you ask for than two games and two jolts to the playoff picture? You know, obviously, like you said, one of them was pretty depressing with Hayward. But to me, you know, having Boston flipped upside down now, the top of the Eastern Conference is, you know, completely different story than we anticipated just 24 hours earlier. I mean, that, you know, that's big news. And then in the West, I thought Houston, although they needed every possible break to kind of keep up with Golden State, that was a legitimate jolt too. I mean, they're trotting out different lineups, different looks, showing that they've adapted. It's interesting. So we've got, you know, two big stories on Tuesday, but then I go to Wednesday, and this is where the hot takes come from, because, you know, one of our friends was asking, well, like, what are some tips for watching games? And I started trying to list off the different things that I was doing. Okay, I try to prioritize, you know, teams that added stars during the offseason. I try to watch all the crunch time. I realized that I came up with like 16 different methods for watching simultaneously. Nice. And it basically boiled down to watch every game all the time and just completely lose your mind over it, because there's
just
so much going on.
Out.
It's like it's the best time of year, you know?
Yeah. Sacrifice everything else in your life and just give yourself to basketball and you'll be all set. But all right, let's get into it. I've got 10 overreactions for us to discuss today. And the first one, I think our emailer Brett really captured the spirit of what we're trying to do here. Brett says, I know it's early, so it may seem like an overreaction, but Kyrie Irving really does not look that explosive with the Celtics. I'm not necessarily a Kyrie fan, but I was interested to see if he could really become a whole new presence where he's the best player on his team. So far, he doesn't look bad, but he's not showing too many signs that he's going to be that guy. What do you think?
Well, what's dangerous about these overreactions is confirmation bias, where you have an off-season take, it plays out in like the first couple of games, and so you're ready to declare victory. That could be a huge mistake. That being said, at some point this summer, I was kind of comparing Milwaukee and Boston and saying, look, like if it's Giannis versus Kyrie, who's going to be the best player on the court? To me, it's going to be Giannis. It's not going to be close. And you look at that game the other night, Giannis was sensational. I mean, posing so many problems with his size, his length, getting to the basket, racking up stats, just hustle all over the court. And we know Kyrie's limitations in terms of, you know, occasionally overconfident in terms of shot selection, not very attentive and locked in on defense. I think questionable leadership skills too. And when a guy like Hayward goes down, all of those things to me really rose to the surface in that game against Milwaukee. You look at the fourth quarter, Giannis is doing his thing. Kyrie's shooting 2 for 10 in the fourth quarter, lots of tough contested shots, and he gets blown by Matthew Dellavedova in a key sequence. Matthew Dellavedova gets a layup on a goaltending call because Kyrie just lets him walk by. And I guess what my concern for the Celtics really is, like, who's going to get on Kyrie about not playing defense in crunch time, about not locking in and just conceding baskets and being willing to trade hoops? I don't see anybody on that Celtics team who's really going to do that other than maybe Marcus Smart. And we've seen how, you know, Kyrie's previous relationships with chippy guards have gone. I mean, nobody needs to go back to the Dion Waiters era in Cleveland to think too long and hard about that. So I think, to me, in terms of the opening week, guys who've had a tough go, it's got to be Kyrie at the top of the list.
The Delly play that you mentioned set off a great flurry of texts from you in the SI group chat. A lot of takes coming last night. And yeah, look, I share your concerns. I think we haven't really talked about the Hayward injury, which it's hard to say more than what's obvious, which is that was awful. And it was like surreal to have it happen in game one. I mean, what happened to him would have been horrible if it happened in the middle of January too. But like in the first 5 minutes of a game that like literally everyone in the world who cares about basketball was paying attention to, it was like a nightmare. And hopefully he'll be okay long term. So long term, the Celtics are not in much worse shape than they already were, because I thought they were going to struggle more than people realized this year, integrating everybody. And so I came out of this thinking, like, you know, they still have a team full of versatile athletes, and they've basically built a team full of guys who are 6'8 and really athletic and can play three different positions. And then Marcus Smart is another guy who is not, he doesn't have the physical tools, but can guard like almost anybody on the court and will be tough. And so I wouldn't panic if you're the Celtics, in part because like if you play smart and play hard in the East, you're basically guaranteed like 45 wins. But you raised a point to me offline, just like, this is like Kyrie doesn't have a great track record with leadership, and he hasn't been, when it's just been Kyrie, and granted, everybody says, well, he was 20, 21, 20 years old on some of those pre-LeBron Cavs teams. But when it's just been Kyrie, the results have not been great. And so he's going to have an opportunity here to answer basically every criticism people made of him last summer. And I don't know.
Here's my question. What does that look like, though? Because I think what we assumed it was going to look like was 32 points a night, super efficient, making it look easy. Sort of like that one highlight he had during the preseason where he like went through his legs three times, went around his back, up and under, left-hand layup, kiss off the glass, where you know, just that combination of moves where it's so smooth. But if you take Hayward off the court, now people are keying on him even more. That is not necessarily what he even expected coming into this season. I mean, he's going to have some serious adjustments.
Well, and just to clarify,
play better than he.
Just to clarify, we are talking overreactions, and we're like half of this is serious. But like, we're not talking about last night's Bucks game, because he was coming off a back to back, and like the Celtics are going to be scrambled for the next week or so. But it's a valid question for the full season, you know. And you're right to wonder about it.
Look, I don't think it's an overreaction to say Celtics fans should panic. I mean, to me, their season's done. I don't think it goes
Wait, do you really believe that?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Because their whole goal this season was being a top two seed, potentially being a number one seed, Eastern Conference Finals. That's gone. You know, there's no way. I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. I don't want to be Captain Bleak over here, but that's just a fact. I mean, Hayward was their best all-around player. A lot was going to go through him on both ends, and any chance that they had at slowing down LeBron in a playoff series, of answering that LeBron question, was going to be answered by Gordon Hayward. There wasn't going to be a scenario where Kyrie was going to outshoot LeBron and the Cavaliers in a playoff series. Like, that was not going to be a method for advancement. And so to me, you look at like Washington versus Boston, you look at Milwaukee versus Boston, you look at Toronto versus Boston. Who's more experienced? Who's more tested? Who goes deeper? Who has more options to limit the other team's best player? And to me, all of those other teams now match up better with Boston now that Hayward's out of the picture. So okay. To me, yeah, their season's done. I don't know. If I'm a Celtics fan, I'm not turning the channel off. Of course, I'm going to keep watching. Kyrie's entertaining. It's going to be fun. You know, they could, you know, make some noise, whatever. But their entire season's looking different. And I also think here's another hot take overreaction. But doesn't Hayward's absence really highlight how out of sync age-wise Al Horford is with the rest of this group? Like the young guys who are going to be stepping up and benefiting from Hayward being out, whether it's Tatum, whether it's Jaylen Brown, like you could see the next version of the Celtics, like the version of the Celtics that's going to be there once Hayward comes back and is up to full speed, you know, sometime down the road. But how does Al Horford, like 5 years older than everybody else, fit into that group? I mean, I guess he makes sense right now as a placeholder, but as a long-term piece, now he looks a little bit like a weirder fit.
The Horford thing is interesting because I think, I mean, they signed him thinking they were going to get Durant and contend last year. And it made sense. I mean, Durant had put out word that he liked Horford's game and would want to play with him in the right situation. And so, like, there were a lot of different factors, but I think that was definitely one of the factors that made Horford so attractive to Boston. And I think for where they are right now, he's a stabilizing presence that gives guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum a better chance to develop. So I don't think he's totally counterproductive for them, but I agree with you 100% that like he's only going to get more limited, and he's a big reason everybody keeps talking about like, well, how are the Celtics going to guard anybody? That's not because of Kyrie. Like your defense is as good as your interior defense as far as if you look at the teams who know how to guard, it's usually because they have great big men. And Horford is like, he's smart and he can hold his own on that end, but he's become more limited over the last few years. And that's an issue. As far as your general Celtics skepticism, I applaud how bold you are right now. And it's a little bit of a cop-out from my end to say we need to wait and see a little bit because they don't have Marcus Morris. And I think Marcus Morris is actually going to help them a good amount this year. I don't think that Jaylen Brown is going to be as good as he looked in Cleveland every night, but I do think that he can help too, because when they go five out, his job gets so much easier. Like he basically just has to dribble in a straight line to go to the rim. I don't know. I'm speaking strictly as a Wizards fan here. I would not feel bad at all if this became a lost Celtics season, but I also just have a feeling that they're going to become one of those athletic teams that's just a pain in the ass to play against every night.
I mean, they've got the nothing to lose thing going for them now, which they didn't have previously. I mean, the pressure factor has been removed, but I think you're being way too kind and too generous here.
And maybe this is all a reverse jinx for me. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. We should talk about the other team in Boston last night because you were filled with the fire after Giannis. What was it, 37-12 or something?
Just light work for Giannis. Okay. I mean,
the second overreaction was Giannis is winning the MVP this year. Explain yourself.
No, I don't think I'm going to go that far because I'm not sure they're going to win enough to keep him in that conversation. But he looked exactly like you wanted him to look. Like we talked about him potentially looking over the summer, easily the driving influence of that game. I mean, he really had the Celtics commentators at a loss for words, comparing him to LeBron in the open court, taking contact, going through traffic, finding himself at the rim in all sorts of creative ways. Nice toolbox of moves. I mean, it's just a tour de force. I think you need to get back on this Bucks bandwagon. I don't know exactly why you fleed or why you wanted to be counter to the Bucks entertainment factor, but Chris Middleton had a pretty nice game too. It's always nice to see. It doesn't look like a ragtag group. I mean, obviously Giannis is clearly their best player by a lot, But it didn't look like he was playing with scraps last night. And I think that they came out really well in that environment, energy-wise. I'm just in on the Bucks. I think they're going to be a fun team to watch. I think 50 wins, that was one of my predictions before the season. I'm feeling good about it.
Okay. Well, if you won't say it, Brad Stevens was the one who came out and said Giannis Antetokounmpo looks like he belongs to the MVP conversation after that game. And you might be right on the Bucks. That might have been a case of us having too much time over the summer to think about things, and I just sort of overthought it a little bit, because Giannis could just be incredible enough to render all of their weaknesses kind of irrelevant until you get to the elite level of the league. I was watching highlights. I didn't get to see that game live, but I watched like the 10-minute highlight package this morning. And like the Celtics, they have good long athletes to throw at him, and they just had zero answer. Like, no matter what they tried, it wasn't working. And so I was watching that, and then I started thinking, like, I'm not sure what team ever would have someone that they could throw on Giannis to like credibly slow him down. And that, yeah, to
San
me,
San Antonio Spurs with Kawhi.
Kawhi might be it. Kawhi or like LeBron locked in a playoff series. But like beyond that, I don't know what you do. And that's a category. It's a very small category. Like there are maybe four or five players in the NBA who just render defenses completely irrelevant. Like you got LeBron, Steph, Durant is like that. And maybe Harden, but Giannis is in that group, and that's it, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he was in the top 10 of SI's top 100, almost like we know what we're talking about. The thing I'd say with Giannis, in the interest of full disclosure here, is I did also predict he was going to come back this season with a three-point shot, and you started to call me crazy when I just made that bold prediction earlier this summer.
Yes.
He doesn't have that. He only took one three last night. He didn't make it. It was pretty hesitant. He didn't even really want to shoot it. But it's amazing how much success they had offensively against Boston without that weapon in his arsenal and without their team shooting threes very well either. There is going to be, you know, tougher times for Milwaukee if they can't figure out the three-point stuff. I mean, they're going to need to find some guys who are consistent sources of that. Giannis is going to need to be setting up their three-point shooters on drive and kick stuff more regularly than he did last night. But his ability to get to the rim and get the line against basically anyone helps compensate for that in a big time way.
Well, yeah, exactly. I go back to a conversation I had with an NBA scout once before a draft, and I forget who it was that was being compared to Giannis, and the scout was basically like, no one should ever be compared to Giannis because he is so long that he's able to make up for deficiencies that like other guys would have no chance. Like, oh, it was Ben Simmons. We were talking about Ben Simmons, and he was like, Giannis is just so much longer that shots within 10 or 15 feet from are just so much easier for him than they would be for anyone else in the NBA. And he's got like a clear line of vision to the rim no matter where he is. And so I think that ultimately is what allows him to get away with not being a threat as a shooter, because he can just score over literally anyone in the league. Speaking of things that are just freakish, the best stat I saw last night was after Giannis took down the Celtics basically by himself. Someone tweeted out, I think it was Alex Kennedy, he said 10 players picked in this year's draft are older than Giannis and 14 others are the same age. That is insane to me.
Giannis is ridiculous. I mean, KD said that Giannis could be the greatest player of all time, and that one like actually shook me. I was like, whoa, that's
a good overreaction. I don't know about
I was like, wow. But coming from a guy who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, like you kind of have to take it seriously. I don't know. I think Giannis will be in the MVP conversation. We can say that after week one. I don't think that's an overreaction. Saying he will win MVP, to me, that's an overreaction.
I have one more question on Giannis. Is he in Lakers Photoshop territory yet?
Come on now. He's going to be a one-team guy. He's already said this. Why
I
do you
hope
always
he is.
Do this? Stop ruining the party, Andrew.
I'm not telling you that Giannis should leave or will leave, but I think that the Lakers fans have a history of anticipating 3 years down the line. I'm just saying, I'd like to see him photoshopped into a couple Lakers uniforms.
Yeah, I don't know. That's that feels wrong.
Like, that's fine.
I feel like
fine.
You need to apologize. Just because we don't get a lot of emails from Milwaukee, you just can't take shots at them and try to ruin their moment.
I'm just throwing it out there. That's how you know you've truly made it, once the Lakers fans start putting you on their future rosters. Next take, the Rockets can genuinely compete with the Warriors.
Did you have this take or did I? Are you trying to attribute this to me?
That was you.
No, I didn't say that. I don't think they've come close to figuring Golden State out, but I do think they're the most intriguing team in the league right now, especially now that Gordon Hayward's out of the picture. I think Boston had that title before Houston passed them. It's just crazy to see a team play a guy like PJ Tucker at center and have that be one of their main looks. And I think it works pretty well. Like, it's super small ball, interchangeable. I mean, we were kind of teasing that out, you know, before the season started. Houston really went for it. Against Golden State, they only played one big, Capella. He didn't even play half the game. The rest of the time, they were playing these small lineups with guys like Mbamute, Tucker. They're shooting at basically every single position. They didn't do a terrible job defensively. I mean, they struggled a little bit when both, you know, Durant and Green were in the game, because those guys are you know, they play bigger than their size because of their length. Everybody has a hard time matching up with Durant as a scorer. But against a lot of teams, that small look is going to work. And I wonder if it's now going to put even more pressure on other teams to downsize in kind of a similar way if you want to keep up with Houston. But to me, despite Chris Paul looking pretty rough on opening night, having some injury issues and all of that, the Rockets have to be elated with how they came out of the gate. They backed it up with a win over Sacramento the other night too. Pretty good start. I'm feeling like that 60 win prediction from the summer is looking good.
Yeah, we definitely got some people in the emails who were pretty high on where the Rockets are right now. And I just don't see that much of a difference between what they are doing this year and what they did last year. Like, maybe that'll change as Chris Paul gets more comfortable, but it seems, again, like a team that is perfect for the regular season and has sort of cracked the code, and is a team that we should all be a little wary of once we get to the playoffs. But look, they looked great. Maybe instead of the Rockets can compete with the Warriors, your actual take on Tuesday night was Warriors games are exciting. You were wrong. I was right. And you were at Oracle. So what was it like during the game?
I just think that people who are trying to call the NBA boring because the Warriors are boring, or they're focusing too much on the gap between Golden State's talent and everyone else, are just coming at the entire league from the wrong way. And I think at this point, if you're still hanging on to that, Andrew, you're trolling, and you need to admit that you're trolling. Like, if that's your take about this season, when we've got all these fascinating MVP performances, we've got injuries totally turning the league upside down, we haven't even seen half the teams play yet, and
yes,
you're going to fixate on the Warriors being boring, you're a straight-up troll, and you should acknowledge it.
Hold on. That's not my take. I wrote a 1,500 word column at the beginning of the week on how the NBA is fascinating despite the Warriors. And I think that the Warriors dominating at the top is going to teach more mainstream fans to watch the entire league and appreciate some of the stuff that over the last 20 or 30 years has more been like hardcore fan territory. Like, I think people are, Joel Embiid is as big a celebrity as anybody, and he's played 30 games. And like, I think everybody's going to learn to appreciate guys on the fringes more as a result of the Warriors. So I'm not worried about the NBA as a whole. I'm just saying I was right about the Warriors, but the Rockets game.
No, because listen, you're trying to say, okay, the Warriors are so much better than everyone, their games aren't worth paying attention to, so we should watch the rest of the league and all these amazing steps they're taking.
Yeah.
The flip side to that is you should be giving the Warriors credit for setting a standard of excellence that everybody else is trying to live up to.
Sure.
Like, Houston, as entertaining as Houston is, because they're trying to keep up with Golden State, Oklahoma City did what they're doing because they're trying to keep up with Golden State. For you to just try to nitpick and say, oh, the Warriors are too fun, I mean, that makes sense draining 70 points in the first half and Nick Young is going crazy and everyone's all in on Swaggy P. It was still a game down the stretch. It was still a very entertaining game to watch. I mean, Houston didn't really flinch. They kept it together despite a nice barrage from Golden
absolutely.
State. I don't think the Rockets are the only team that are going to play it like that. I think the Warriors are still a target for everybody. Now, how many teams can realistically take them down? I'm not sure. But I don't think Golden State's any less fun. You know, I think they're still... I mean, look at how they're playing, though. Making pass.
We shouldn't minimize how hilarious that Rockets game was, because I, midway through the third quarter, took to the Twitter streets and started calling you out for being wrong about Warriors games allegedly being exciting. And then right then is when the game changed. Draymond got hurt, granted, so that sort of changed the equation. Replaced Draymond Green with Nick Young, and suddenly... The playing field gets leveled a little bit, but you're right. You got momentary vindication for your misguided Warriors apologies on Tuesday night, and I was happy for you. I was also texting you during the fourth quarter, offering you 8-1 odds on a Rockets win, and you wouldn't take it, but it would have been an easy $800 for you.
Yeah, well, you don't pay your bets, so it's fine. Like, I wasn't too worried about it. But I think the takeaway with Golden State is it's still one ankle from being a really, really interesting playoff series. You take Draymond out, they're a bit like you said. I mean, when you're putting in Looney or whoever it might be, that's a completely different team. I mean, the Warriors' ceiling is completely reliant upon their five best guys being out there. And maybe you could say, okay, they don't necessarily need Iguodala. Fine. Having their four all-stars on the court is what makes the Warriors go. They are definitely beatable with one of those guys out, especially if it's Draymond. So I think when I look at that opening night, the conclusion that you were trying to reach for, that you had already reached in your head and tried to apply to the game, is that Golden State's so much better than everyone.
Yeah.
It's just the wrong conclusion, man. I mean, we've got ourselves an interesting league here.
We do have an interesting league. The Warriors are an exception, I think. And just a quick story, like, for the full picture here, after I put the Warriors on my teams to ignore list, Sports Illustrated went and transcribed that section of the pod, which I was not prepared for. And I when that happened, I was like, excuse me, that was a pod only take. This is supposed to be a safe space for us. But then it was on Twitter, and some Warriors troll was like, Sharp is a hack. He's just dragging Golliver down. And every now and then a troll will get to me. And that was one of those times where I was like, man, like, maybe he's right. Maybe I'm just dragging Golliver down every week. Because I hadn't actually been watching basketball. So some of these were basically just guessing through the preseason. And then I watched the Warriors for the first 30 minutes.
You were guessing. You were guessing. But look, sorry. Like, I need to issue an apology, cut you off right here. That was my burner account that I sent that message to you. I'm sorry it got through to you.
Well, the full story, though, is that I watched the Warriors and I was like, nope, I was right. Ben is completely wrong on this. Thank you very much. And also, don't claim that this is just some troll opinion that I share and that other people don't share. I was talking to NBA front office people before the game last night, and they agree too that it's like if the Warriors are healthy, no one has a chance, and that's just the way
it is. Well, look, I would hate and envy the Warriors if I was an NBA front office person too, because I wouldn't be able to keep up with them. I mean, to me, if your take is the Warriors are boring, you might as well be the guy who replies nice every single time the number 69 appears on the internet, or the guy who replies, my wife left me, because it's just like the laziest instinctive response to a subject that they don't understand.
It's not lazy. It's just true. We can admit that it's true and appreciate different things about the league. We don't have to fight the truth. That's all I'm saying. All right.
Well, we should probably change the subject to some of these other teams that are just trying to do their best to keep up with Golden State, okay?
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about the team that's probably Golden State. It's, the Spurs definitely think they're Golden State's toughest competition. So fourth take here, LaMarcus Aldridge is worth every penny of $24 million a year.
Yeah, I'm amazed by Twitter, because I don't even think I saw this one. And Twitter has every take. So Twitter is so anti-LaMarcus Aldridge, they won't even give him credit after a gigantic opening night performance without Kawhi Leonard and Tony Parker. this Aldridge extension, first of all, blindsided me. I definitely did not expect it coming, even though they had that big summit of, you know, Popovich and Aldridge sitting down and kind of ironing things out. I didn't think that was going to lead to a recommitment. Do you agree with me that paying Aldridge now takes them completely out of the LeBron conversation? I think my LeBron to San Antonio dreams are dead. I think they're just done. I think that deal killed them.
So it's tricky, man, because first of all, if any other team had the summer that the Spurs had, we would be like, what the hell are they thinking? Someone needs to intervene. They gave that deal to Pau Gasol. They gave LaMarcus that money. And I don't know. I think like anyone else, people would be panicking about how this team is wasting Kawhi's prime. But I think one of the things that's really important to consider is that apparently LaMarcus was going to opt in on that extra year anyways. So if they were going to be paying him on the back end of the deal regardless, I think it might make sense to sign him to this extension and then try to trade him to clear space for next summer. That is probably the most optimistic timeline.
Yeah, but I don't know if I see that. I think this deal hurts his trade value. I think it pretty much locks him in there for at least the next 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think he's one of those guys that only works in certain situations. He's not a foundational player anymore. And like a good comparison would be to Millsap. Like Denver can talk themselves into paying Millsap that contract because of the versatility fit and because he can space and spread. LaMarcus can't do those things, you know? LaMarcus is kind of a center trapped in a power forward's body and mind. And there's only a few teams, I mean, I could think of like Utah, San Antonio, where he would be allowed to sort of play the role that he wants to play.
Yeah.
And everybody else would say, look, it's just going to be too much roster work to build around him, and we're not going to be good enough with him as our main guy to pay him, you know, 20 plus million, so forget about it. So to me, this is just a recommitment from San Antonio. They're saying like, look, we really believe in our ceiling from last season, that game one Western Conference Finals against Golden State where they had the Warriors on the ropes. They really believe in it, and they want to keep running it back, and they're willing to do it past just this season with the core. And that's why I think like any, you know, dream scenarios of getting All-Stars next summer or whatever it might be, you know, trying to convince LeBron to mind meld with Popovich and the ultimate resistance to both the President of the United States and the Golden State Warriors, I think that scenario is gone. I think they are.
Listen, Ben, I can't let you do that. I can't let you give up on the LeBron to San Antonio dream, because when that happens, or if that happens, you will look like the smartest man in basketball, and we can all go back to like mid-July open floor, July 2017. No, I know. I know it's that gone. This makes it tougher, but don't let the dream die, okay? I'm not going to let you do that. And
I have to. And it hurts because I love LaMarcus Aldridge, but I think if you're LeBron, that's the deal breaker. It's like, yeah, I'd go play with Kawhi if we could like rotate these other pieces and have a core.
I don't know. He's not going to be completely LaMarcus untradeable.
And Kawhi.
If LeBron's interested, the Spurs will find a way to clear money. That's not something that concerns me.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a lot trickier now. I mean, the whole plan was geared around you have to have that flexibility factor, and I think now this is who they are.
But glass half full, you were hitting me up genuinely impressed by LaMarcus last night, and he did look good, and he is still capable of being a second option if Kawhi's healthy. And I think the other side of this is like, look, if the Spurs aren't signing LeBron next summer, I don't know who they were going to spend $24 million on that would be as good as LaMarcus and allow them to still like be in the conversation with Houston and Golden State and OKC. So that may have factored into it too. It's like, look, if we can hit a home run next summer, we'll find somewhere to send LaMarcus. And if not, then he gives us a high floor.
For sure. And they look good without Kawhi last night. I mean, LaMarcus played well enough that I saw some Timberwolves fans turning on Karl Anthony Towns. I think I'm not sure I've seen that before. A little frustration with, you know, his defensive ability and how easily San Antonio was kind of getting things done. So it's not the worst thing in the world to recommit. You know what I mean? Like, this is a pretty good team. I'm not sure if they're going to be good enough to beat Golden State, but what they showed me against Minnesota was that they're still in this mix with Houston. Like, they didn't take that huge step back that some people thought they might, given the age of their players and so forth. Like, their defense was still really locked in and ineffective.
Yeah, and Rudy Gay looks strangely competent and already sort of feels like a Spur.
Crazy. How does that happen? Like, how do you get absorbed? Like, you have 12 years where everybody looks at you one way as this losing player who has empty stats and shoots. You undergo one of the worst sports injuries there is in terms of the Achilles. You magically pop back like 6 months later, ready to go. I still don't have any clue how Rudy Gay was cleared to play this season. It's absolutely insane. When he went down, I figured he wasn't going to play until after this year's All-Star break.
Yeah.
And not only that, but he has had an entire personality like facelift. Like, you put that Spurs jersey on and you become a completely different person. It's crazy.
This is why people trust the Spurs when they do things like the LaMarcus extension, because they have a way of pulling things off that just make no sense. And yeah, like the Rudy Gay signing was another part of their summer that any other team, we would have been alarmed. And then they do it and it's like, well, he'll probably grade out to like a B plus player this year and be like a vague sixth man of the year candidate. And that's certainly what he looked like against Minnesota. We did get one question that I didn't put in the rundown for you, but Muse asks, doesn't Greg Popovich starting DeJounte Murray over Patty Mills answer the question once and for all about who's the true basketball mind of this podcast?
Oh, nobody sent that question in. Get out of here. Stop making up fake questions. But look, I was actually wondering how we were talking about the Spurs for 10 minutes and you haven't brought up Murray.
He looked good, man. He looked good. What was he, 7 of 8 shooting, 16 points? Didn't have many assists, but I mean, he's like a rangy defender that fits perfectly with how they want to play. And if he gets a jumper, he's going to be legitimately really good.
Yeah, and I mean, San Antonio, they can cover up for that in lots of ways and make him effective. The thing I'd say, remember how Giannis kept growing? There was those reports of like, hey, he's an inch taller, he's an inch taller. I think Murray's wingspan is growing year by year. I don't think his arms have stopped growing. I think there's a chance he's going to have like a 7'8" wingspan by the time he reaches his prime.
He's going to be great. I can't wait. All right. The other side of that game was pretty bleak. And you threw out a theory. I'll let you explain it.
I can't say it, but you're going to have to say it, and then I will silently nod my head, and the listeners will understand.
Late night, I got a text message saying, has the game passed Tibbs by?
This is the ultimate opening week reaction, but I'm a little concerned. It mostly comes down to Taj Gibson. And it's not fair to judge Minnesota's entire plan against a road game against San Antonio. Like, that is a completely unfair standard.
Yes, even without Kawhi.
I'm just a little nervous because the idea of Gibson as a spread four, it's not going to work, right? But Thibodeau seems kind of tied to this idea that Gibson is a starter and a big minute player, and that is essentially playing two bigs when you have him in there with Towns. And I just don't know if 2017-18, that's the way you can play at an elite level, especially in the Western Conference. I can understand why that would work back, you know, in the kind of halcyon days of the Bulls. But a lot has changed in the last 5 years. You go back to that lockout season. I mean, scoring is up like 15% since that season. I mean, it's a completely different game. More threes, more space, you know, more smaller lineups. And I just, front court personnel stuff has me concerned. Like, I'm a little bit worried about how do you share the ball and the touches. I mean, you look at who gets their shots last night. It's a very even distribution, although Teague was kind of a non-factor as a scorer himself. So that's a question in terms of, is everyone going to be happy?
Yeah.
Is there enough shots to go around? But I think the bigger question is just like, stylistically, if you don't have that spread for who you can really trust and you don't go to smaller lineups more often, and you're really sticking and trying to make this whole Taj thing work, is that a limiting factor on how good you can be as a team? And, you know, no one's questioning Thibodeau's work ethic or his basketball knowledge or anything, but we do know how he likes to play. We do know he loves to run his guys into the ground. We know he loves to play kind of big and traditional. And you know, last night, Gibson's minus 17 in 27 minutes. You know, how many of those nights is he going to be willing to sustain before he starts to think about, you know, other scenarios? And it could actually be a situation where it's like Doc Rivers Redux, where, you know, Tibbs the GM kind of sabotages Tibbs the coach. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't really have a great alternate look to go small other than playing Butler at the power forward spot, which is probably how I would go if I were them. But
dude, it's a completely,
I don't know, I'm nervous.
It's a completely valid question. It definitely sounds like a hot take, and I'm sure Wolves fans would be pissed off, but it's fair. And I mean, a lot of Bulls fans still love Tibbs, but, you know, I've always thought of him in the, he's like defensive D'Antoni, where like, They were both kind of 5 or 10 years ahead of their time and laid out the blueprint that the rest of the league ultimately absorbed. I mean, Tibbs, every team in the NBA uses principles that he sort of perfected with that Ubuntu Celtics team on defense. And the thing that works in D'Antoni's favor is that the rest of the league now is just like playing offense the way he wanted to play, and the rest of the league is not playing the way Tibbs wanted to play. I think that more than anything, though, you hit on it at the end, where like Tibbs the GM is the real problem. I mean, like, the roster construction is concerning to everyone who looked at the Wolves this summer, and like, everyone was freaked out and unsure how it was going to fit. And Tibbs built this team himself, and I understand why he wanted control as he took over in Minnesota and wanted a final say, because like, he was sort of stabbed in the back like repeatedly in Chicago. But you said it, like, Taj Gibson doesn't really make sense next to Karl Towns. I'm not sure Tibbs knows how to use Karl Towns. I'm not sure why they went big after Jeff Teague. Like, I would have preferred to see them sign someone like George Hill, who can like at least hit threes for them. But it's too early to write off the Wolves. We agree on that. But there are valid questions and concerns about how Tibbs sort of works for them.
Yeah, your take defending the Thunder was always like, they have so much talent, they're just going to win a bunch of games.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might not be perfect, but they're going to be able to talent themselves to some wins. I think that actually really applies to Minnesota too. But I just think it's going to be worth tracking in terms of the lineups for Minnesota. It's like, how long are they going to be sticking with Taj like this? Or what are their, you know, backup alternate plans? To me, that's going to be sort of a foundational question here for their season.
Yeah. All right. Next topic, from a mediocre opener for Minnesota to easily the worst debut in the league. You said two things to me last night. You said, one, contract the Phoenix Suns, and two, Devin Booker's just got to eat the fine and publicly demand a trade.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to go at fan bases by saying a team should move or their team should be contracted. So I'm going to take that one slightly back.
Okay.
I will say the Suns do not look like a professional basketball team, period. And I think if I was the owner or the GM, the right move today, Thursday morning, after losing by 48 points at home in your debut, is to publicly apologize to the fan base and to offer season ticket refunds. That team was not ready to play. No, 100%. Like, if anyone wants to get out of the season tickets, they should be allowed to. That was a disgrace, what they did in terms of coming out. And you could say
you're
they're
not
young.
Wrong. You're
These
not
These guys
wrong.
Were flat out not ready to play. And if I'm Devin Booker and his representation, it's going to be fascinating to see the trickle-down effect. Because what we've seen is all these stars have said, look, forget about loyalty. We're going to take control of our own careers. We're going to be able to kind of move the chess pieces and get ourselves out of bad situation. There is no reason Devin Booker should believe in this organization to build a winning product around him. To me, it's a broken culture. You look at the lack of progress from all sorts of young guys. You look at his lack of support, just their overall preparedness for opening night. Yes, they played against a better team. No team should lose by 48 points in their home opener and get
so
almost
bad.
Doubled
so,
up.
They looked so lost like throughout the second half. It was
just
bleak,
real
man.
Quick though on Booker. the trickle down effect is going to be fascinating, because if you're him, do you take like a 5-year designated player rookie extension?
Exactly. Well, so that's why it's interesting, is because the way the latest CBA was set up, I think once the details trickled out last winter, everybody said like, wow, so we're just putting golden handcuffs on like every great young player in the league is going to be locked in through his first 8 or 9 years. And the Suns may be awful enough so that Booker sort of breaks the mold a little bit and is just like, nah, I'm hitting unrestricted free agency. I don't care if it costs me $30 million or $40 million or whatever the actual number will be. Because yeah, there's not a lot of hope. And this is what happens when you can't build a team out of like 19 and 20 year olds and expect it to work. And I really like Earl Watson, but I don't know if he's the right coach for them. It's not looking great. And that I think the worst part about last night is like, there's not many ways that this can get better for Phoenix, right? Like, I don't see any structure looming on the horizon.
No, I mean, they just locked in their GM and decision maker, Ryan McDonough, to an extension. Great call. Glad we can keep him
around. You know what? No, you were early on McDonough skepticism, and you deserve credit for that.
Yeah, look, the thing with Booker, though, is, I mean, can you use the threat of, like, I will just play on that qualifying offer and bounce to find a way to force a trade sometime during your rookie contract? We haven't really seen that play out for a high-profile player.
Yeah.
If anyone was going to do it, though, it should be him. Because think about all of the guys who have left Phoenix whose lives are so much better, starting with Isaiah Thomas, going to Goran Dragic, the Morris brothers.
True.
Do you think the Morris brothers spend 1 second wishing they were back in Phoenix? There's no possible way. And then you look at the guys' careers who just go to die in Phoenix, Tyson Chandler, right down the list. I mean, that is a toxic situation. It's clear. And the only guy you could say who didn't really get a post-Phoenix boost would be Jeff Hornacek, but that's his fault for going to coach the Knicks. He knew what he was getting into. Everybody else, as soon as you leave Phoenix, your life is immeasurably better. So
it's a great point, man.
If I'm Booker, I'm starting to get creative. I want to be, you know, everyone's saying, oh, he's the next Kobe, he's the next this, he's the next that. I mean, Booker has a real chance to push the boundaries here in terms of player control of their own career. And I saw enough after one night to say he should do it. You know, I mean, just get out of there. Save this guy.
It'll be a fascinating case study. You're right. It's something we should all keep an eye on, because Booker's also sort of like, he has his eye on a bigger platform. Like, what it doesn't necessarily have to be a bigger market, but like, that's a dude who expects to be a superstar and a household name. And it's not going to happen when you're losing by 45 on opening night. So
Hey, real quick question though on this. Did I go too far saying they should offer season ticket holder refunds? I heard you chortle.
A little bit, because I think that's a lot of money. That's a sizable amount of revenue to jeopardize if you're a basketball team. Like,
it's the right thing to do, though. I mean, imagine you're a 65-year-old guy, retired, you know, you're from the DC area, but you got to go find that sunshine down in Phoenix, but you want to stay in touch with the NBA. You plop down your $10,000 for season tickets or whatever it would be for Suns games, and that's your first night. You know, you've been building all summer, the new wave, see the young Suns, Josh Jackson, Devin Booker, Dragon Bender's healthy, here we go.
Think of all the memories at Talking Stick Resort Arena that you'd be sacrificing, though. It's tough. It'd be a tough decision for anybody. Our next overreaction, though,
one more with the Suns real quick.
Okay.
Does Watson make it through this season, or is he going to get Jock Vaughn?
I think
kind of feels like he's going to get Jock Vaughn.
I was watching that fourth quarter and I was like, well, wow. So maybe they'll just fire Earl Watson tomorrow. It wasn't inconceivable. That's how bad it was.
The first step should be a public apology, followed by the season ticket refund, followed by fire the coach, who has no control over the talent. That would be order of operations I'd go in.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Earl Watson is dealing with Marquese Chriss and Dragon Bender, who have no idea how to play basketball. And so he's in a tough spot. But the next one is D'Angelo Russell will be better than Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, well, we know who didn't think this.
Keep that possibility in mind. That's all I'm asking. 30 points, 5 assists, 12 of 22 shooting for D'Angelo last night. He did, watching back this morning, he got filleted by Darren Collison and Bojan Bogdanovic on a couple plays, so that's not great. Defense is still very much a work in progress.
Did those numbers come in a win or a loss? You forgot to mention
they
that
were.
Part.
It was a loss, and I don't know how it's. And it was. I don't know how it's possible to give up 140 was it a points to that Pacers team.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a loss to Indiana in which they gave up 140. I think we should probably mention that. It seems like an asterisk here.
All I'm saying is everybody should keep that possibility in mind because I think Lonzo is going to be a lot of fun. But I've heard a lot of people, like I was listening to a pod with Bill Simmons, and Bill Simmons was like, Lonzo is the guy, like he's a better passer than LeBron right now, which like is hyperbole and he's just having fun. But like, I don't think that Lonzo has like superstar potential necessarily. And everybody just needs to slow down. And there's a chance that D'Angelo does have like all-star potential, whereas Lonzo is a great glue guy. And now I'm realizing that I sound like the crazy one, so I'll slow down. But it does.
There's a wide spectrum of opinions between he's a better passer than LeBron and he's worse than D'Angelo Russell. And I think there's a good chance Lonzo lands in the middle of that spectrum.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All I'm saying is it's a possibility.
You're never going to quit D'Angelo. Let's be honest. You're going to be telling us about D'Angelo in 10 years. You're going to be saying how D'Angelo just needs another chance. You're going to be like the guy who still believes in Dwight Howard
right now. And it's mostly your fault because you hated on him so hard during the first 2 years in LA that I just felt the need to defend him. And I did love him coming into the draft. So part of it is that I'm not ready to give up. The next one, though, the Jazz are making the playoffs. The Nuggets won't win 40 games. I threw that in there. Neither one of us totally feel that, but like, what the hell happened in the fourth quarter for the Nuggets last night?
I was going to say this overreaction would have been flipped if you had done it at halftime of the game, right?
Yeah.
Like the Jazz are completely toast and Denver's definitely making the playoffs. I think we should kind of reserve judgment there. I mean, Denver's point guard position, though. I mean, we had highlighted that as a potential issue. They get rid of Jameer Nelson. Moutier might be the worst player in the NBA, it seems like.
Dude, we have the Moutier conversation every fall. Every fall, you hear how impressive he looks in training camp, and then opening night comes, and he's like borderline unplayable. Like, someone needs to step in and stage an intervention in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely an issue. I mean, with Utah, one of the reasons why I trusted them is because, like, hey, you get down big, but you're a grinding defensive team with a very clear identity and with parts that kind of fit together. That is how you sustain without a lot of offensive scoring talent, right? Like, that's a pretty good blueprint. And I think that, you know, that's pretty much what played out. I don't necessarily want to overreact too much to this game either. Although, if I'm a Denver fan, that's not what I wanted from my first
night.
Because you spoil this like Will Barton as Sixth Man of the Year candidate type performance, which you called. So nice work on that one. I mean, you look pretty smart on opening night. I mean, that just kind of goes out the window. And to me, the offense didn't look nearly as good as last year. I was worried a little bit about their offense coming back to earth just because the hype had gotten so big and everybody was assuming they were going to be able to sustain that forever. But I think in terms of overreactions, I mean, Mike Malone on the hot seat. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the inevitable next step if they can't get it together these first two or three months. I mean, if I were them, though, I would completely seriously, I would be on the phone with Ryan McDonough like today trying to trade for Eric Bledsoe because this is like all their chips are in on this season and they might as well try to get that done right now as opposed to waiting until February.
If Moutier goes to the Suns, I will laugh so hard. That will be the single funniest trade in the NBA.
No question.
McDonough would do it too. He would do it.
You're 100% right. I do think last night was really encouraging for the Jazz though. And we say the Nuggets offense should have looked better. I think part of that is probably Utah's defense and the ability to get their shit together in the fourth quarter and actually score in the second half. that's a big win for Utah. Like, we didn't know whether they were going to be able to do that. And we didn't know that whether this team was ever going to be able to come back from a double-digit deficit. And they did it. And I don't know. Joe Inglis played pretty well. Or Ingles. I always screw it up. But they look like a real credible threat that's going to be tough every night. And the only other thing from that game that should be discussed, there are already clips going around Twitter today about how bad Jokic looked on defense and how easily Utah picked on him for the final, like, basically all night.
Yeah, I mean, that could go back to coaching in terms of, like, okay, well, how do you protect your star from those kinds of situations? You know, scale down his role a little bit. But yeah, I've never thought that Jokic was a good defensive player. There was some debate about that last year. I've never really seen it.
Yeah, and it's
that's
tough.
Why the offense has to be there. That's how they're going to win. I also thought Utah's depth, that was one thing that we had talked about. You know, how do they get past the Hayward situation? They looked fairly deep to me. I mean, as long as Burks is healthy, I mean, it was nice to see Burks actually have a game every once in a while. I mean, it feels like that's a once a year phenomenon. But they go pretty deep, and I think they can wear teams down. So I don't know. I think I would, if I'm a Utah fan, I'm feeling maybe pleasantly surprised, but, you know, pretty much right on track. If I'm a Nuggets fan, I'm not full blown panicking.
Yeah, I wouldn't panic yet if you're Denver, but I would, just to be safe, start carpet bombing Ryan McDonough with calls until you can get a deal done, because the point guard thing is not going to be tenable over the next 6 months. Like, you can sort of hold water for the next month or so, but make this happen. Don't wait till February.
For sure. Yeah, no, I'm loving this Bledsoe for Moutier trade. It's the funniest thing.
All roads lead to Moutier on the Suns. All right, final one. The Sixers are making the playoffs. I watched that game, and I don't know, there were a lot of emotions. It was stressful, more stressful than I would have liked. The main thing for me, though, watching Philly, is they are so big that they are going to make life difficult for every team they play. Like, they just have so much length to throw at teams. And it's going to be hard for them. They're a weird team. Like, they're playing their starters against the Wizards bench, which made the Wizards bench look even worse than it already is. And so, like, Brett Brown's rotations are tough to figure out, but they just have a lot of bodies to throw at you. And I think that they're going to be tougher than we maybe thought, in part because Ben Simmons looks even better, at least after one game, than I expected.
Yeah, he looked exactly like I expected. 18-10-5 sounds pretty good. I mean, that's a strong rookie of the year opener performance. I mean, that sets a tone. Covington, they're going to make the playoffs if Covington can hit 7 threes.
That's a great point. That was I had that in my notes. I was like, I don't think Robert Covington is going to look like Kawhi Leonard every game they play.
Yeah, the length and stuff, I mean, that all goes back to Embiid, right? Like, they have those things that you're mentioning when he's in there. When he's out of there, you know, it's a whole different look. They didn't necessarily look like a playoff to me when he was off the court.
I don't know, though. They still have a lot of weird athletes to throw in there, whether it's, like, I mean, even Jared Bayless is, like, not the sexiest player in the league, but he can be effective as an offensive threat next to Simmons. And I actually thought they had better ball movement when Embiid was off the floor. Granted, they can't guard anybody right now, and they also threw away 5 or 10 possessions over the final, like, 20 minutes of the game that basically handed the... Like, the Wizards didn't totally play well enough to win that game, but the Sixers just kept giving away possessions that would have made it close. And that's one issue that will probably be there all year also.
Yeah, I mean, typical young team stuff. I think maybe the way I should put it is, when they don't have Embiid, they're really quirky with the matchups. When they do have Embiid and the other players, you know, like guys like Covington and Simmons are now kind of shifted down, I mean, that's pretty imposing, you know. And even for, you know, a young team, it's hard to be imposing with your sheer physical, like, presence. And they can actually get there. So that's sort of, to me, where their ceiling comes from. They're always going to be at their best when Embiid's out there and they're kind of clicking. I have doubts about, like, their stability, like you're mentioning, when he's not on the court. But promising a debut for them. I think they got to be happy. I mean, even though TJ McConnell kind of left in a body bag thanks to Sean Wall, that's you know, that's not the worst opening night performance. I don't know if you want to call it a moral victory or whatever, but you know, it's
you know,
up there.
It was a moral victory for the Wizards too, because anyone who watched the game from start to finish was a little concerned about some of the things they saw from the Wizards. I'll speak for myself. I was a little concerned by John Wall forcing things literally for 48 minutes. And again, we're back in the mode where he's bitching to the refs pretty much the entire game. And Bradley Beal took a while to get going and never really got comfortable because defenders with length tend to bother him. I think he got comfortable when JJ Redick started guarding him. So there was a lot to be concerned about, but then the Wizards also had four or five highlights that anyone who didn't watch the game would think, oh my God, that was a great debut. They beat the Sixers. John Wall looks awesome. Everything is fine. And I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I think that it's just it'll take them a little while to get in rhythm. But to their credit, that's a game that for four of the last 5 years, they would have lost. And so it was encouraging to see them sort of come out in the second half and actually put it together and win.
Yeah, and when the game was sort of in the balance, I thought Wall really exerted himself as the best player on the court.
Level.
I mean, it was kind of a B or a B minus performance from him overall, but when they needed him to, he stepped forward, and I think he's at that point of his career. I mean, this really feels like prime year John Wall to me. I felt the same way watching Damian Lillard. It's this is really their time to kind of make their reputations. This could wind up being sort of a high watermark.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun in DC last night. Wall had his moments. Kelly Oubre is the only other guy who was that was probably the most important takeaway from the Wizards. He might actually be a real useful 25 to 30 minutes a game sixth man, which really sort of changes the equation for them. Did you have any other lingering thoughts after the week in basketball? We've had to record this before OKC Knicks and before the Lakers game because you're covering the Lakers game tonight. But any leftover thoughts here?
No, I mean, I think we just fired half the coaches in the league. That's pretty good for
we contracted
for an
the Phoenix Suns. yeah, it was good. Good well, way to kick things off.
I think maybe we should go back quickly and give Portland their share of the credit. I talked about maybe they come out of the gate looking pretty good. You know, their chemistry, cohesion, and the continuity factor from having a quiet summer carried over. They didn't even have a monster game from Nurkic inside, and yet they were kind of clicking on all cylinders. They beat Phoenix. You know, Phoenix certainly contributed with their lack of readiness, but Portland took joy in pounding them. And you do like to see that, got some kind of bench guys, maybe who you wouldn't necessarily expect to be big contributors. A guy like Pat Connaughton comes and gives them a nice opening night and kind of in place of CJ McCollum.
Evan Turner looked pretty solid too.
Yeah, they might be figuring out the Turner thing a little bit. We had highlighted two guys, Harkless and Aminu, in terms of, if they just play 10% better than they did last year,
yeah,
and get back closer to where they were 2 years ago, that changes the team, and I think you saw a little bit of that on opening night as well. So for them, off to a pretty nice start.
I think you're right also that it all starts with Dame, where he is coming into his own as just a killer who is going to execute pretty much every night, and that's a real skill to be able to count on him for 26 or 27 a game and shooting close to 50% and getting to the line every night. That sort of changed the equation, and that's something that Wall still needs to do to hit that level of consistency.
So one final take we should probably mention is opening night for the Pelicans.
Okay.
So they're playing against Memphis. Memphis loses Jermichael Green to a terrible injury very early on. Now, granted, Jermichael Green is not Gordon Hayward, but it's one of those ominous things of what does this mean? So you have that going on the Memphis side. You have a pretty nice start energy-wise and kind of commitment-wise from Cousins and Anthony Davis. Cousins finishes with 28, 10, and 7 blocks. Davis finishes with 33 and 18. These guys score 91 points and lose by double digits. Their bench gives them 8 total points from like 80 minutes of guys playing. And Holiday is basically a non-factor. You probably can't name their other starters.
I really can't.
Etuan Moore and Dante Cunningham are the other starters. I mean, they give you about what you expect. And it's sort of this situation where how many people are going to get fired or traded, you know, after this comes apart?
It's tough.
Because
it's tough.
It's not like Memphis is world beaters at this point. I mean, they did look good. They executed well and so forth. But you're squandering two, you know, solid nights from your only guys. What happens when Cousins doesn't have 7 blocks? You know, or what
true
happens
story
when Anthony
from,
Davis
I didn't get to see
doesn't
the game.
Have 18 rebounds?
So I didn't get to see the game last night, but sitting on media row during the Wizards game, Michael Lee from the Vertical, I was sitting next to him and talking to him the whole time. And at one point he leaned over and showed me a Twitter video from that Pelicans game. And it was like some lost Jordan Crawford play where he was doing a spin move. And he was like, does this look familiar? Who's this? And he was like asking me to name the player. And I was like, I have no idea who that is. because I didn't know that Jordan Crawford was still in the NBA. And apparently the Pelicans are counting on him for real minutes as the sixth man. So that is not a great sign. But look, we can't end on a down note like that. So we'll say this for the Pelicans. They are not the Phoenix Suns. They've got that going for them, no matter what happens this year.
I mean, barely. If you combine their two rosters, could they make the playoffs? That's a question.
That's a good question. We'll answer that next week. We'll come back with a bunch of mailbag questions. We've gotten a lot of good stuff this week, but basketball is back, Ben. Go to the Lakers. Watch the beginning of Lonzo. I can't wait to hear about it, and I will talk to you next week.
Yeah, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. It's so easy now, guys. Just hit the 5 stars. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Openfloormail@gmail.com for all of your great overreactions, your hot takes, and also your national park breakdowns. We got like 3,000 or 4,000 word emails from people about the national parks. Fantastic. Nothing.
Not only that, we got a national park ranger writing in to give us his thoughts. And let me tell you something. Every single national park related email makes Golliver's day. It almost makes him like unreasonably happy. So shout out to everybody who's writing in with thoughts. And
we had somebody compare the Channel Islands to JaVale McGee. That's peak. I mean, that guy is more peak Golliver than I am. I feel like I have to keep up. It's amazing.
That's all you ever wanted from basketball writing. It's everything that's happening around the national park conversation in our open floor emails. We'll be back next week.
I'll talk to you, Andrew.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.